Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast. It's Friday, April 22nd. Of course, many Christians in the U.S. celebrated Easter last Sunday, but for those in the Eastern Orthodox tradition, it's coming up this Sunday. That most celebratory of Christian holidays has a level of tension this year, as we've already said, especially in the Russian Orthodox Church, which has many followers in Ukraine. The leader or patriarch of the Russian Church is very much aligned with Vladimir Putin, and his pronouncements of support have led to almost 300 Russian Orthodox priests and deacons signing a letter calling for peace, and over 300 Ukrainian Orthodox priests to petition the Eastern Orthodox leadership for Kirill's ouster, that leader of the Russian Church who's aligned with Putin. To talk about the role religion has played in this conflict and to take your calls, if we have Eastern Orthodox listeners right now, I'm joined by Ishan Tharoor, Washington Post foreign affairs columnist and author of their Today's Worldview newsletter, where he has written a column titled The Christian Nationalism Behind Putin's War. Hi, Ishan. Always good to have you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, it's great to be back with you.
So, Ishan, for people who haven't seen or heard this story yet, how supportive of the invasion of Ukraine has the leader of the Russian Orthodox Church been? He's known as Patriarch Kirill. Am I saying the name right?
I believe so. I'm not a Russian speaker myself, but I think that sounds about right. And Patriarch Kirill, you know, you should really look at him as an extension of Putin, the Putin regime. Of course, during the Soviet era, the church was suppressed in many ways. Now, as Russia has emerged as this kind of revanchist power on the world stage, the Russian Orthodox Church, based in Moscow, under the leadership of Patriarch Kirill, has functioned in many ways as an extension of the Putin regime. It has kind of operated hand in glove with Putin ideologically. And you know, the major event that that triggered a lot of the conversations around this was a speech that a sermon that Patriarch Kirill delivered at the beginning of Lent, or the Orthodox Lent, on March 6th, where he described the war effort in Ukraine as one of, in metaphysical terms, as this kind of project of salvation for ethnic Russians. He endorsed it wholeheartedly. He even framed it as part of this much larger struggle against liberal values, against LGBT rights, against this whole suite of concerns that have been, you know, articulated over time by the Russian Orthodox Church in ways that are very striking. And, you know, you can map along the kind of rightward turn of certain communities in America, religious communities in America as well, onto this. And that have been, you know, also very striking in the sense that you see a very clear opposition between the Russian Orthodox Church and, say, the rhetoric coming out of the Vatican with Pope Francis, or even the ecumenical patriarch in Constantinople, the other really powerful center of Orthodox Christianity in what's now Turkey. Hmm. And so there's a really interesting set of pillars that have been constructed and tensions that emerge, and that they map onto the political, geopolitical tensions of the Ukraine conflict as well.
And Patriarch Kirill is known for promoting what he calls Russian world, based on the story of the founding of the Russian Orthodox Church in the 10th century in Kyiv, I'm seeing. What does he mean by Russian world?
So this is a narrative, this Ruski Mir, Russian world. This is the kind of guiding ideology of the Putin project right now. And Patriarch Kirill is seen as somebody who has really propagated it quite intensely. Now, this founding origin of Russian Orthodox Christianity goes back to, yes, the 10th century, when this warrior prince of the Kievan Rus was in Crimea converted to Orthodox Christianity, married a Byzantine princess. And that is the kind of founding story of Orthodox Christianity in what's now Russia, but also Ukraine, also Belarus. And so for people like Putin, for people like Patriarch Kirill, this is a moment that founds not just the Russian nation, but indicates how what is now Ukraine, what is now Belarus, are really just part of the same founding story and inseparable. And in, and the rhetoric that Patriarch Kirill has used is not only are we do they share a founding moment, but they share a historical destiny. And this is
So Putin uses that religious narrative and religious history to back himself up when he says Ukraine doesn't exist as a separate nation?
Yes, to indicate that Ukraine is essentially part of the same Russian world, that project, that as the rest of the Russian republics. And you looked at the 2014 Winter Olympics opening ceremony in Sochi, there's a whole tableau of this moment of conversion in Crimea. So this is something that they've been signaling for some time. And of course, you had ecumenical blessings for the Crimean invasion. You had Patriarch Kirill and his lieutenants blessing the Russian invasion of Syria. So there's always been, at least in the last decade and a half, a very clear synergy between the political aspirations and projects of the Kremlin and the more philosophical, ideological positioning of the Russian Orthodox Church.
Let's take a phone call. Here's Debbie in Astoria. You're on WNYC. Hi, Debbie. Thanks for calling
in. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. It's Holy Week for the Eastern Orthodox people. And, you know, I'm worried a little bit about a schism within the Orthodox Church, within the various segments, I guess, of the Orthodox Church, because our patriarch, Bartholomew, recognized the Ukrainian Orthodox Church about 4 years ago, and he was targeted by the Russian Orthodox Church as a result of that. So now, with the current situation, there might be a worse schism within Orthodoxy. So it's worrying, but at the bottom line is that it's not about the religion, it's that people are losing their lives. So whatever happens church-wise happens, but at the end of the day, this is a war, and it's brutal, and it's horrible, and we just pray for the Ukrainian people, no matter what religion we are. So thank you for taking my call.
Debbie, if I can ask, if you're still there,
is
there a theological basis for the schism, or is it for the potential schism,
or is it
just support Russia versus support Ukraine?
Yeah. No, it's political, and as we all know, church and politics do mix, unfortunately. So I believe it is
totally
political.
I've never noticed
political.
That in this country.
Never, right? Yeah, so it exists everywhere, unfortunately. And I do believe it's totally political. It has nothing to do with God or Jesus or anything else.
Debbie,
so
thank,
it's just,
Thank you so much. Alexander in Stony Brook, you're on WNYC. Hello, Alexander.
Hi, Brian. Thanks a lot for taking my call. My parents are actually in Ukraine right now, and they're about to celebrate Easter, and they're refugees, and they're currently in Lviv. It's really striking that the blessing to attack other members of the Orthodox religion was given by the Russian Orthodox Church. And there's an interesting angle to that, is that Christianity came to Ukraine first, and after it was spread out and eventually ended up in region which is right now Russia. And at the same time, what Putin is trying to do, he's trying to appropriate that religion because he's building the statue of Saint Volodymyr, who brought the Christianity to Ukraine, and trying to say, well, Putin is Volodymyr, and he is Volodymyr Volodymyrovich, and so he's doubly blessed, and he is spreading Christianity to the outskirts of Russia. So it's really hypocrisy in many ways. And it's really sad that other Orthodox Christians are suffering because of the blessing of the Patriarch Kirill.
Alexander, thank you for raising your voice. I hope your parents in Ukraine and anyone else you know are okay. Let's take one more in this set. Gregory in Glen Ridge, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gregory.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I've enjoyed listening to how the different listeners are talking about how in Ukraine and also in the United States, in Ukrainian populations, we have Ukrainian Orthodoxy. roughly 30-ish years ago when Ukraine became independent, I was at a point in my life where my grandparents, who were still alive at the time, raised me in the Russian Orthodox Church. But they made the decision, because of political reasons from that time, to join a Ukrainian Orthodox Church. And as the previous caller said, we've only been acknowledged as a legitimate church quite recently. But there's a sense of nationalism in the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, where there's a direct link to the people of Ukraine, and not only what they're going through now, but what they've gone through historically with, I hate to say the word genocide in that context, but where they were starving the people of Ukraine. And I'm very proud that the Ukrainian Orthodox individuals here in the United States, even prior to this, have been supporting Ukraine in every way that you can imagine, between food and sending articles of clothing, hosting families, going to visit, doing community service when they visit. It's really amazing to see.
Thank you for that story, and I appreciate your call. And Ishan, what were you thinking as you listened to that set of Eastern Orthodox callers? Anything in particular to any one of them?
No, I mean, they're all such interesting and informed comments, and you know, my heart goes out to those whose families are commemorating this Holy Week in such adverse and terrifying circumstances, I'm sure. It is the politics behind this schism is quite interesting, and the schism accelerated in 2014. I mean, in some ways, this is a very slow-rolling schism that stretches back centuries. In other ways, it's a much more recent manifestation. If you look at Ukraine right now, I would say there are roughly around 11 to 12,000 parishes that still kind of look to the Russian Orthodox Church, the Patriarchate in Moscow. But now there are close to 7,000 that have been independent. And since 2018, as that caller said, when the Patriarch Bartholomew in Istanbul or in Constantinople gave the blessing for the Ukrainian Orthodox, gave the kind of stamp of legitimacy to the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, there are around 7,000 parishes that are now formally independent or part of the Ukrainian separate tradition. And the animosity between Bartholomew and Kirill has been one of the kind of subplots to what we're seeing right now.
Are there Russian Orthodox aligned churches in other countries, including this one? Are churches outside the region divided?
I would assume so. I mean, I think that you have a whole spread of them in the post-Soviet world, in the Baltic states, and elsewhere. But you find in many of these places that the priests and those who are preaching and delivering sermons are not echoing the words of Kirill. I think what he has said has been shocking to many, perhaps not to a majority in Russia or even in some of the Russian Orthodox churches in Ukraine, but certainly it has set up a bomb and has really underscored the politicization of the Russian Orthodox Church in its current manifestation.
Let's take one more call. Mike in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Brian. It's nice to talk to you. I offer a little bit of a different perspective on things. I am from both nationalities, Russian and Ukrainian. And growing up in a home with those sort of divisions, it occurred to me, or it was obvious to me and my siblings, that the Ukrainian side of our family was always much more open and integrated into American life, and the Russian side was always much more conservative and much more much less apt to embrace change, whereas the Ukrainian side really was more Western, to use another analogy. And so all of this doesn't really surprise me at all, and I think many people who have shared my experience of that dual nationality would have experienced very much a similar type of thing.
Do you find any sort of culture war aspect to this division we touched on before? We'll talk about it a little more before we run out of time. This sort of anti-LGBTQ test in the Russian Orthodox Church, less so maybe in the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. Are you experiencing anything like that?
Absolutely. While neither tradition has really embraced the LGBTQ movement, certainly, there would be much. My experience is that there is much less rejection and much less homophobia on the Ukrainian side than on the Russian side, certainly.
And Mike, thank you very much. And to touch on this a little bit more deeply, Ishan, you quoted a sermon that Patriarch Kirill, the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, gave in March soon after the invasion began, in which he said, quote, "Today there is a test for the loyalty to this new world order, a kind of pass to that happy world, the world of excess consumption, the world of false freedom. Do you know what this test is? The test is very simple and at the same time terrible. It is the gay pride parade." Oh my goodness, the patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church said that, huh?
I mean, it's incredible, but it is in keeping with their rhetoric and their ideology that they've been propagating for quite some time now, which is, you know, unlike the direction with which the Pope Francis is leading the Vatican, and even the direction with which Patriarch Bartholomew in Istanbul is directing his church, which is toward a more friendly, you could say, more liberal approach to matters, opposed to nationalism, in favor of climate action. A kind of really sort of a much more integrated, open-minded approach to religion. The Russian Orthodox Church under Kirill is this real font of illiberal, frankly right-wing, nationalistic ideology. And in many ways, if you listen to their pronouncements, they could be said by someone like Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban in a much more secular context. They see themselves as this oppositional flank in the religious community that is standing athwart these trends. And, you know, one of Patriarch Kirill's lieutenants once said that they're opposed to both secularization and rationalization. They really see themselves kind of fighting the tide of the modern world in some way. And that does dovetail with Putin's own kind of revenge of history political project. He refuses to accept the end of the Cold War. He refuses to accept Russia's borders as they are. And frankly, this is appealing not just to certain people in Russia, but also to a whole wing of Western politics, whether it's here or in parts of Europe, where there is sympathy to these kind of illiberal visions of the world, where there is sympathy to those who would stand up to the EU and NATO and so forth. And so it is part of a culture war. It is part of a global culture war, at least a Western culture war. And it's really quite fascinating how it's tracking on to a hard conflict where people are dying and at this time.
And so last question, we know that U.S. conservative evangelicals have supported Putin over that issue, but are divided over given the brutality of the attack. Franklin Graham, for example, that very conservative evangelical leader, has said he doesn't support the invasion despite his affinity for Putin's religious stance. So I'm just curious if you think, even though you're a foreign affairs columnist, if this split is likely to affect Republican politics here vis-a-vis the war.
I think it's awkward for a lot of people here. It's awkward for a lot of people on the far right in Europe. You know, Marine Le Pen, who's about to run for re-election, not for re-election, who's running for election on Sunday in France,
yes,
has been saddled with her taint and her association with Putin. But at the same time, we've seen that the tug of domestic politics, the animosities of domestic culture wars, usually win out over these awkward foreign entanglements.
Ishan Tharoor, Washington Post foreign affairs columnist and author of their Today's Worldview newsletter. Always great to have you on. Good conversation. Thank you very much.
Always great to be with you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.